So I again have a note from our teacher and the person who's helping me to do this series, James Berez. He has sent yet another letter to you all. Isn't that sweet?
Yes.
He is so sweet. I know. Dear Seattle Sangha, I'm hoping that going through the principles from my Awakening Joy course is supporting you in your Dharma practice and that you're getting a glimpse of seeing practice as a path of true happiness. The Dalai Lama opens his beautiful book, The Art of Happiness, with this line, "The purpose of life is to be happy." Let those words sink in right now. The purpose of life is to be happy. His Holiness the Dalai Lama. The purpose of life is to be happy because when you open to true happiness, all your gifts shine through without obstruction and everyone around you benefits as well. Far from being self-indulgent, your true well-being is the greatest gift you can give others. You can offer others. The topics this evening go together. Gratitude is a direct way to open the heart. The Buddha said, to be grateful is a blessing supreme, and it creates a spacious container to more skillfully open up to the second theme, the inevitable suffering in our lives. Please note with this second theme, don't look for suffering. That's good advice. Just be open to working with it when it arises. When you've added two new themes each week, don't feel you have to do it all or abandon what's been working. You might incorporate a new theme as a way to build on what you've been doing, or perhaps you'll prefer to emphasize another previous theme. Working with intention, noticing wholesome states when they are here, being present for your experience in a mindful way. As you go through the principles with Bonnie, use whatever practices help support you. Don't feel you have to keep up with it all. All of these are offered to support inclining your mind towards more well-being and joy. Keeping that intention in your consciousness without grasping impatiently for a result is the most important thing you can do. A crucial element in developing a new habit is believing that it's possible. That's where the power of intention comes in. If you can envision opening to greater well-being, that will inform everything else you can do. This is not a pass-fail test. Remember that all of the practices are presented to simply incline your mind towards greater well-being and ease. Inclining the mind is not trying hard to make something happen. It simply means inviting yourself to feel at ease, being willing to experience well-being, recognizing and appreciating it when it's here. Good luck with the practices. May everyone you meet benefit from your developing a greater well-being within yourself. With much metta, James. So let's say it again. Thank you, James. Because he does listen to the tapes every week. So tonight we are, as James said, focusing on two of the elements of the Awakening Joy series. One, the first is gratitude. And first, you know, I want to point out that, you know, in James's notes, he says that often people, you know, he does this actually over a 5-month period, so we're doing it in a much smaller time frame, but he says that oftentimes people can have an adverse reaction to trying to incline their mind towards joy. And that adverse reaction is sometimes people notice a lot more suffering in their mind. Is that happening to anyone? A few people are actually seeing a little bit more suffering in their mind, a couple more. You can be truthful. Well, actually, I think in this practice, that's actually a really excellent thing to see. that is not something that we need to be afraid of, or that indicates that you're a much worse person than you thought you were. Actually, you know, my teacher Joseph Goldstein talks about at some point in the practice, you're really, really happy to see the negative habit patterns in your mind, because at that point you have a little bit of intention and a little bit of will to actually do something about it. So when you see all of those negative mental habit patterns, you know, things that you might think about often, or habits of the mind that aren't really serving you, you know, at some point you actually get really happy about it, like, wow, look at that. You know, you can see it clearly. And if your mindfulness, if there's a certain strength to your mindfulness, you see those things without a lot of stickiness to it. You can just see it as, you know, just another mental habit pattern that you can recognize. Hold it in mindfulness. Again, remember, we're not suppressing, we're not obsessing, we're not denying, you know, we're not following all those negative habit patterns that we see. We're just holding them in our mindfulness. And with our mindfulness, you know, part of the instruction is to really extract the wisdom out of that experience very directly. So, you know, we want to look at it and we can see the suffering of it, right? We can see our own suffering and how we perpetrate suffering on others. And that, just seeing that, wisdom arises and kindness arises and, you know, positive qualities arise. And that's what gets rid of those negative habit patterns. It's not our ego. It's not, you know, our will to overcome. It's really the wisdom that does all the work that we're wanting, you know, to get done. So we want to see those things, and we want to see them with some steadiness of mind and see clearly, you know, what they're doing to us and what they're really doing to people around us. So that is a good thing, to see that. So seeing negativity is a good thing. And intensive mindfulness practice is actually a very humbling experience. So, you know, one thing that's really wonderful about Seattle Insight and our guiding teacher, Rodney, is that he emphasizes mindfulness in daily life. You know, he emphasizes that, you know, what this is, according to one of our guiding teachers, Gil Fronsdal, we have kind of a village temple model here, right? That this is our village temple and this is our community is coming together. And that's a really positive focus to actually have that, you know, to know that mindfulness is important and the Eightfold Path is important for everything that we do. You know, there's not a time, you know, that we go about our lives that can't be central to what we're trying to, how we're walking in the world. But in addition to this daily practice, there's also intensive retreat practice. And, you know, there's wonderful retreats just down the road at Cloud Mountain Retreat Center. I'm actually teaching P2, the second 6 weeks of the 3-month retreat at IMS this year. It's totally booked with a very long waiting list, but I'm also actually taking a seat at the February month-long at Spirit Rock if anybody wants to sign up for that. I think that you could get into that. And but what I want to say about that is intensive practice is always a very humbling experience. You know, it really allows us to see just, you know, the habitual habit patterns in our mind. And that's a good thing. You know, it kind of disabuses us of any notions that we have of being better than or even worse than. You know, we realize that all of these qualities of mind, you know, they're part of being human. And, you know, we can accept them and open to them with some kindness. And then when we see those in other people, when we have seen that clearly in ourselves and accepted that with kindness, what happens is when we see that in other people, You know, it could be the cause of actually kindness and empathy to arise in us as well. You know, we can see that in others. So tonight I'm going to talk about gratitude. You know, gratitude is the antidote to the complaining mind. And we all have so much to be grateful about, don't we? Here's a wonderful little saying about gratitude by M.J. Ryan. Gratitude is like a flashlight. It lights up what is already there. You don't necessarily have anything more or different, but suddenly you can actually see what it is. And because you see it, you no longer take it for granted. It's like a flashlight. So we're working this week with turning on our flashlight of gratitude. So one of the keys to gratitude is opening up to contentment and wonder. And I love this notion of wonder, this sense of wonder that we have, this sense of opening to the mystery of life. You know, I think as children, how many people in here have small kids? Eridan is a small kid. We have Eridan here visiting us. We love her. She's 11 years old.
I'm 10.
Oh, she's 10, excuse me. And she is a small kid. And, you know, there is something about the wonder, or seeing the wonder in life, that, you know, we can get jaded as we get older and kind of lose that. You know, but part of the wonder and part of gratitude is opening up to something bigger than ourselves as well. When we see the life through, see our lives through bigger lens, you know, whether you believe in God, you know, for those of you in here, our Sangha members who do believe in God, you know, that sense of mystery of God or life itself, or just the ground of being, or for me, you know, as a Buddhist, just taking refuge in the Dharma, just how profound these teachings are. And, you know, one of the translations of the Dharma, of course, is like nature, right? Things as they really are. I like to call it physics. The Dharma, on one hand, are the teachings of the Buddha himself, but they're also the physics of really what's the reality of things. And, you know, I love, you know, a few weeks ago, or was it last week? I guess it was last week we had Anushka here. Was that last week? 2 weeks ago we had Anushka here. And she has this wonderful illustration. I'm sure you guys remember it who saw her. This illustration of, you know, gravity. So if I held this up and I dropped it and I expected, you know, that my happiness was intent on it just hanging in the air, you know, I'm never going to be happy. And that's, you know, what a lot of us do. I mean, that's partly how our suffering arises, because we don't see clearly the truth of reality, the truth of the Dharma. And, you know, those things, very simply put, are the truth of impermanence, that things are changing all the time. The truth that any conditioned thing is not going to give us, you know, lasting happiness and satisfaction. And then, you know, thirdly, the truth that, you know, we're not individual, you know, we're not individual selves the way that we picture that we are. We're actually much more interconnected and much more, you know, reacting to causes and conditions than we understand. And if we understood those things very deeply and we could see those things as we just walked around in life, you know, those are the things that would really reduce our suffering. And that's a place for the wonder in life as well. You know, could we actually incline our mind to seeing reality in the moment? It might make what's here right now just so much more precious to really appreciate and to really embrace. So, looking at contentment and wonder as keys to gratitude, And then another element of the wonder or contentment is the sense of humility and trust. Can we trust that? Even though, you know, we don't have control over how the future is going to unfold, can we trust that if we can live according to our deepest aspirations for wellness, you know, and happiness, if we can really understand the source of our happiness, and if we can live according to these principles and in line with this aspiration, can we just trust that things will unfold the way that they're going to unfold? And can we just surrender to that? Another thing my teacher Joseph says is, the only control we have over the future is the quality of our mind in this moment. So it's only what qualities we have right now that will impact and create the conditions for you know, the future that we're envisioning to arise. And half the time we don't even know if things that arise that we think in the moment are negative are actually our good karma. Have you ever had that experience? All the time, right? Me too. It's like, I think, wow, I really wanted something to be like this, but it turned out like that, and it turned out like that was my good karma. One of my girlfriends, actually pretty recently, was commenting to me. She says an old saying in Indian country is, man's rejection is God's protection. So actually, James offered a few websites for us to reflect on gratitude. So I want to just tell you one. He has this 7-minute video that his 90-year-old mother made, and he wants us all to watch it. It's really a sweet little video. The title of the video on YouTube is called "Confessions of a Jewish Mother: How My Son Ruined My Life." And it's only 90 minutes. I mean, 90 minutes. I mean, it's only 7 minutes. That would be long. It's only 7 minutes. And it's worth, I'm sure that if you Googled James Perez and mother's video, you would find it. But I'm going to tell you what it essentially says. And his point in having us watch it is that, you know, you can change your neural pathways at 90. And that, you know, we shouldn't think that, well, we're just too old to change habit patterns in our mind. Actually, I saw that close up with my mother. I have a mother who's going to be 90 years old this year, and she's living with me right now. That's a huge blessing in most of the time. And you know, I noticed, you know, I think it was during the very first 3 months retreat that I sat, I had this huge, it wasn't even a conceptual breakthrough, it was just a real insight into one of my most significant and entrenched habit patterns, and it was the habit pattern of self-pity. I had a lot of self-pity, and it was so ubiquitous, it was there so much, that I couldn't even see it, because that's what I just thought my normal kind of attitude was, right? And when I saw it, it was so useful, because it created a certain body. And you know, that's what these habitual habit patterns do. You know, we think, well, Bonnie has this habit pattern, but it's actually the other way around. This habit pattern has a certain Bonnie. You know, that's what happens, is that when you get this habit pattern in your mind, it constructs you as a certain person, that there's a story that goes along with it, that you're like this and you're like that and they're like this and they're like that, and this happened and this is going to happen. And then as soon as that mind, you know, that habitual habit pattern is gone, all of that stuff is gone the next minute. It is so interesting to look at that. But anyway, so, you know, I was able to see this habitual habit pattern of self-pity, and I saw where it came from. My beloved mother has had it for, you know, at the time, you know, maybe she was 75 or something. And when she would come to stay with me, I would actually point it out to her. I'd say, oh, can you feel that right now? You're feeling self-pity. And I swear to you, in like a month, you know, maybe 6 weeks of doing that, it deconditioned in her too. It was amazing to me to see that. So I just, you know, say that as a way of, you know, encouraging and all to really work with those habitual habit patterns and, you know, realize that they're stories. In fact, there's this, I love this, you know, one of the most useful things is to have mental notes, right? To have really catchy mental notes when these habit patterns come up. And actually there was a really nice one that I'm gonna totally use this one. And James's notes, he called it the drama channel. It's like, there goes the drama channel. Turn it to the drama channel. And actually, I was apprenticing with Sally Armstrong, and she had one, FOMO. I love this one, FOMO. She has that a lot. She said FOMO was one of her habitual tape habit patterns, and that is fear of missing out. Right? Fear of missing out, FOMO. So it's good to come up with like catchy ways to think about these habitual habit patterns that we have. So the drama channel, where are you stuck? When is your drama channel turned on? And can you catch it with mindfulness? Can we catch those habitual patterns that tend towards the negative? And remember, just to remind us all, it's a product of evolutionary psychology, right? I mean, if our ancestors looked more to the positive than the negative, if someone said, hey, what's that rustling in the bushes? And we said, eh, don't worry about that. You know, those ancestors of ours didn't make it. So, you know, it's part of our evolutionary psychology that we would be more attuned to all the negativity in our minds. But, you know, again, you know, we have absolutely, just with the power of intention, we can change that. So I know some of you like to hear about the science of these things, and James included in his notes this wonderful, sweet little study on gratitude, the effects of gratitude. So this was a study conducted by Michael McCullough at the University of Miami and Robert Emmons at the University of California, Davis, UC Davis. And so they had three groups of people. They divided a group of people into three groups. One group was instructed to focus on hassles, the hassles in their life. So we want you to think about all the bad things happening to you. The second group was instructed to focus on things that they were grateful for. You know, so they were giving daily reminders and prompts to reflect on what they were grateful for. And then the third group was given the instruction to just focus on ordinary life events. And this was the outcome of the research. They found, you know, I think it was one of those randomized controlled trials, and it probably lasted for 2 or 3 weeks. And this is what the outcome was for the grateful people. Grateful people were more optimistic, they were more energetic, enthusiastic, determined, interested, and joyful. So just reflecting on gratitude and developing a habit of gratitude will influence and impact, positively impact those very positive mental states as well. Grateful people feel stronger about how handling challenges. They're more confident when challenges do arise. They have fewer illnesses. They get better sleep and more sleep. They exercise more. They're more willing. They're more likely to help other people. They have less cluttered environments. I thought I was grateful, but when you look at my house. Grateful people have less cluttered environments, are less envious, and have more clear thinking. Wow, that's a lot of stuff. Actually, my friend Beth here, she was just telling me during the break, she's a midwife, and we've missed her at Sangha. We have another Thursday night Sangha. We've missed her. She's delivered 5 babies in as many days, or maybe 3 days, right? And she said it's such an impact. She said it's all mudita, it's sympathetic joy. Can you imagine being at 5 births in 3 or 4 days? That's a lot of joy. Wow. Thank you for sharing that with us. Mudita. So how do we practice gratitude, or how do we strengthen gratitude? There's some really good suggestions here. Martin Seligman, Martin Seligman, who is considered one of the fathers of positive psychology, he says one thing that we can do, and I love this idea, is to actually write a gratitude letter. Don't you love that? And that, you know, it doesn't have to be really long. He said it should only be about 300 words. I mean, that's like one page, right? Not even a page, maybe. 300 words, and it should be very concrete. You know, it should be very concrete about you know, what it is that somebody did for you and what it meant to you and what impact it had on your life. And you should write a gratitude letter. And then you should actually email that person or call that person and say, "Hey, I want to draw, you know, I want to touch base with you about something." And then, and really not even tell the person what you want to see them about, and just go see them and say, "Hey, I wrote this gratitude letter about you, and I want you to know, you know, how you positively impacted me." Isn't that beautiful? Let's all think right now, who would we write our gratitude letter to? Is there someone in our lives that when we were going through a hard time, that they were really showed up for us? Actually, and this gets me into the next thing that we can do about gratitude. And that is, know when you're feeling gratitude in your body. Know what it feels like. And you know, one thing that I love about James's series is he says, don't go for the gusher. I think I've said that before, but I love that. You know, there's this little cartoon. I can't remember which cartoon it is. And it's a little cartoon with a in one frame, you see this little cartoon character saying, "I'm happy. I'm really happy." And in the next frame, he's saying, but I'm not ecstatic. I'm not ecstatic. And then in the final frame, it's like, wow, I must really be unhappy then. You know, it's like we always have to go, or for, you know, probably it's an influence of our culture, over the top culture, that everything just has to be, you know, over the top, an over the top experience. And, you know, one of the things that we need to realize, reflect on that, is that we don't need it to be that way. that even a little bit of gratitude is better than no gratitude. And even a little bit of gratitude is worth pausing and feeling what that feels like in our heart and what that brings up for us, you know, as far as our thoughts and how that prompts us to connect with kindness and with, you know, authenticity. So, you know, that's another thing. To just be present with. And you know, another thing that James said last week that I think was very important was, in this Awakening Joy series, joy is a placeholder for all of the positive qualities, for all of essentially the Eightfold Path. So, you know, these practices are not only for joy, but for all the rest of them as well. The Ten Paramis, you know, the Eightfold Path, the Brahma-Viharas, the Four Divine Abodes, you know, friendliness, just having a friendly response to life, compassion, sympathetic joy or mudita, and equanimity. You know, knowing that we wish the best for someone and knowing that we have no control how things are going to turn out, and just surrendering to that and being okay with that. So these are ways for us to ramp up the gratitude in our life. Martin Seligman says, you know, write your gratitude letter. Send that out. So this is how he describes it. Your task is to write a letter of gratitude to this individual and deliver it in person. The letter should be concrete and about 300 words. Be specific about what she did for you and how it affected your life. Let her know what you are doing now and mention how you often remember what she did. Make it sing. Once you have written the testimonial, call the person and tell her that you'd like to visit her, but be vague about the purpose of the meeting. This exercise is much more fun when it's a surprise. When you meet her, take your time reading her letter. Isn't that beautiful? So here are some other practices that we could think of it as homework or other ways to increase the gratitude in our lives. Every night before you go to bed, write down, if you can do this, or even just think. If you're going to bed with another person, you could actually do this as a exercise between you. But think of three things that went well that day. You know, it could be anything. What went well today? What would you say if you were actually doing that right now? What would be the three things? I think for me it would be, I told my mother I loved her and I gave her a big hug today. And that made me happy and that made her happy. And I appreciated her because I was doing all these notes on gratitude. I said, I appreciate you so much. And then, you know, what's really sweet is after you write those three things, say why those three things went well. So you can actually support the causes of happiness to arise. And I will actually give these to Chris. I don't know if Chris is taking Jonathan's place, putting all these things up on the website. Okay, so I will put all of these things up on the website. So next to your positive event, what went well today, write down, why did this happen? So for example, you know, the example here is, you know, my sister gave birth to a beautiful baby, or for Beth it was, I delivered two babies today. That's a lot to be grateful for. And you can think, why did that happen? And you know, you might reflect on, wow, I spent a lot of my life training to do this well. That's so beautiful. Yeah, I'm just happy reflecting on your goodness. You know, and so you can think about why something good happened today. You know, maybe you expressed a little patience, maybe kindness arose in you, or some reason like that. So that's another thing that we can do. So boy, I spent so much time on gratitude. Now I have to get to, I'm supposed to be talking about joy in difficult times. Maybe I'll take a little time next week to talk a little bit about that. But so I'm going to shift hats a little bit. I'm going to take off my gratitude hat. I'm going to put on my suffering hat. You know, that's something that I talked about, I think, last week about, you know, a lot of people take mindfulness classes. We all know how mindfulness is so popular nowadays, and people are taking mindfulness classes. And it was Elizabeth Lin. Is Elizabeth here? She teaches mindfulness actually at the University of Washington. She's a physician. And she said, oh my gosh, and this is true of all the mindfulness classes they teach at the U, after the fifth class, people don't want to come back. Because by the fifth class, people with mindfulness are practicing it, they're really opening to a lot of the reality of the suffering in their lives. You know, that's the first noble truth, is that, you know, we're opening to just how difficult life can be. And Elizabeth told me that actually they changed some of the classes, so they're now they're only five sections long. Because, you know, they've had to condense it because people don't come back after the fifth section. But, and, you know, it's interesting because we know that each of the Four Noble Truths, you know, all of the Eightfold Path can really be, you know, it's such a hologram the way this path works. It can all be thought of within the Four Noble Truths, right? And each of the Noble Truths actually has a verb associated with it. I loved it when I heard that, that there's a verb associated with each of the Four Noble Truths. And, you know, the verb associated with the first noble truth, the truth of unsatisfactoriness or the truth of suffering, is that suffering is to be known. You know, that is our task as a way to awaken, is we have to open to the suffering of conditioned existence. But, you know, the good news is, and there is excellent news, is that once we realize the you know, lack of satisfactoriness in conditioned existence, it really turns our effort and it inspires us, it changes our aspiration to become famous, to become rich, to, you know, get more stuff, to buy a new car, to have a trophy husband or wife. It changes those goals for happiness to something incredibly more meaningful and something that actually has the potential to bring happiness for others and ourselves. You know, it changes what our aspiration is. So, how does joy help us to hold suffering? There's a series of talks, actually four talks, that were incredibly meaningful for me. And Carrie Pederson told me that she also, you know, totally, we hadn't talked to each other. We both listened to the same four talks on Dharma Seed and they had a huge impact on us. And there are four talks called Natural Mind by Ajahn Suchito. Do you know Suchito? He actually came here and talked. And he actually has these four talks on the nature of mind. The first talk is an overview talk of the nature of mind. And then the other three talks are about the characteristics of awareness itself. You know, what's going on here is that we all have essentially the same awareness, and all of these mental objects are floating through our awareness, right? And we attach to them and we think they're us. But, you know, according to the Abhidhamma, there's only one of 52 things happening at any time. You know, maybe there's more than one thing, but those things are passing across our awareness. But there's a huge amount of resiliency. If we could see clearly and see the nature of awareness, nature has three qualities that I want to mention right now because it's the source of a huge amount of resilience in us. We all have this. Those three characteristics are, the first one is that awareness knows things. Actually, Sayaja Utejaniya has this saying that the way he teaches mindfulness is that something is always being known. And so that's the first quality of awareness, is that it knows things. They call it luminous, but that's kind of an analogy for knowing things. The second quality is that it's incredibly grounded. I love this quality. It's like the earth, and, you know, it has the characteristic of the earth. You could throw a pile of crap on the earth and the earth doesn't care, right? The earth says, bring it. You know, it really just has a stability. It really absorbs everything. You know, I think about the Buddha touching the earth on the moment of his enlightenment, bearing witness, having the earth bear witness that he was part of the earth. And, you know, he deserved this awakening. So that's the second quality, that it's very grounded and it is able to really hold anything with equanimity. And the third characteristic of awareness, I love this quality too, is that it's effortlessly, without effort, it always knows exactly the appropriate response in the moment. Wow. You know, I think that's an acknowledgement or reflection of the fact that there's just inherent wisdom in it. It has inherent wisdom, and it always knows what the appropriate response is, whether it's a revolution or a nod of hello, you know, and everything in between there. So without greed, hatred, and delusion running around awareness, you know, naturally wisdom and compassion arises there. Because when you think about it, all wisdom is about how to not suffer, right? I mean, when you think about wisdom that arises, it's about not suffering. So it's inherently compassionate. And that's our response to the world. There's so much more to say about both of those topics. So I want to give you this saying by Pema Chodron on suffering. The Buddhist teachings are fabulous at simply working with what's happening as your path of awakening, rather than treating your life experiences as some kind of deviation from what is supposed to be happening. The more difficulties you have, in fact, the greater opportunity there is to let them transform you. The difficult things provoke all of your irritations and bring your habitual patterns to the surface. And that becomes the moment of truth. You have the choice to launch into the lousy habitual patterns you already have, or to stay with the rawness and discomfort of the situation and let it transform you on the spot. Sadhu, sadhu, Pema Chodron. So, and we only have guess what? I'm going to bring some joy to you guys right now. Guess what? I'm so happy to announce, as I get to announce this, this makes me happy. We are having a special guest here in this seat, probably in that seat, Friday, April 24th. Yay! Do you know who it is? Yay! Oh, so everybody knows already. Sayada Utejaniya is going to be here. Wow. That's like, is anybody excited? No. That's like good news, right? Sayada Utejaniya. He is one of the most, I don't say this disrespectfully, but I call them like celebrity monks. There's three celebrity monks, and the reason I say that is because they actually tour Spirit Rock and IMS every year or maybe every 2 years. And when they come, all of the teachers are the first ones signed up to go sit with them. And so Sayada Utejaniya is going to be here. He's going to be vacationing up here for 4 or 5 days before he teaches at Spirit Rock. So that's a wonderful gift to us. Probably thanks to Steve Armstrong, probably, right? So we can take our hat off in gratitude to him. So in our last minutes, I'm going to turn it over to Andrea to make some announcements, but any big comments, any big insights, or any things that anybody wants to say about how the Awakening Joy Course is going for them? Anybody get enlightened this week? Huh?
Several times.
Oh, yeah. This person got enlightened, and that person, and that person. Thank you, yes. Any good wisdom anybody wants to share? Yes. Oh, Eridan. Stand up, Eridan, so people can see your beautiful little self. Thank you, Eridan. And how about if we set the goal to try to just be more joyful and to be grateful, to reflect on what we have to be grateful for. And right now, I am so grateful for you, Eridan. I want to say that.